Now it's time for the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. This is your weekly informative hour all about eyes. Learn about cataracts, ask a question about glaucoma, find out how diabetes affects your eyes. Stay tuned for an entertaining and educational program about eyes and eye care. Call in to have your questions answered by the doctor. Now, your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Good morning, everyone. It's time once again for our regular weekly program about eyes and eye care. It's called the Hawaiian Eye Show, and it's sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. We're going to be here for the next hour talking about glasses and bifocals, about laser beams and eye surgery. We can talk about your cataracts or your contacts, itchy eyes, droopy lids, or whatever it is that interests you. If you'd like to join in today, give us a call. Our number here, 521-8383. We'd love to hear about your experiences and answer your questions. If you can't call in today, or maybe you're feeling a little shy, you can always email your questions. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions in coming weeks. If you want to get to us right away, you can tweet your questions to us on twitter.com/Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A, no spaces. And you can always check us out on Facebook. A lot of the information that we talk about here on the radio program is there are links to articles related to some of the information on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Hawaiian Eye Center. So just look for Hawaiian Eye Center everywhere on Facebook, on the web, Dr. Tortora on Twitter, and there you go. You also check out from the website, check out my blog and other good stuff. So during the next hour of this program, we'll discuss eye news from around the country and around the world. Sometimes we'll do an eye quiz to test your IQ, and we'll have a lot of fun today. Remember, all opinions expressed on this program are those of myself and the other medical doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center. I am an ophthalmologist, or IMD, which means I'm a medical doctor specializing in the eyes. And we're going to try to be consumer-oriented today, make an effort to give you the best possible practical advice, but since I can't see through the telephone, I may have to recommend an examination before I can tell you exactly what's going on in your eyes. Hawaiian Eye Center does sponsor our program today as a public service, so sit back, relax, and enjoy an hour all about eyes. We usually like to start out the program talking about some of the real-life situations that have come into our office and how they affect the individual people who have experienced them and other people who might have similar types of problems. And in this past week, one of the things that we came across was a patient whose thyroid problem was causing significant difficulty with the general health and the eyes in particular. Thyroid disease is an interesting condition. We don't know what causes it most of the time, but it can cause symptoms leading from ranging from lethargy and difficulty getting things done when your thyroid function is too low, to hyperactivity and excessive fast heartbeat and sweating and other things if your thyroid activity is too high. And both of those types of conditions do exist as medical conditions, high thyroid or low thyroid, that they call hyper or high thyroid, hyperthyroid or hypo or low hypothyroid. So hyperthyroid or hypothyroid, both exist, and both conditions actually can cause changes in the eyes themselves. The most common condition that affects the eyes, the thyroid condition that affects the eyes, is a condition known as Graves' disease. Graves' disease is thought to be an autoimmune problem, meaning your immune system isn't working quite right. It's kind of attacking itself. And the autoimmune system means that the thyroid gland is being attacked by your own immune system, basically, is what we think happens. And so at the early stages of Graves' disease, the thyroid activity is quite high. And then as the thyroid gland is destroyed or damaged, the thyroid activity drops down. And there's something about this Graves' disease, and maybe it's the thyroid hormone, but it causes changes around the eyes as well. And the types of changes it causes are basically to make the muscles that move your eyes, what we call the extraocular muscles, it makes those muscles thicker. Now, why is this a problem? Well, the muscles still work when they're thicker, but the problem is that the eye is encased in a bony tissue called the orbit. So the eye is protected by the orbit, the bony orbit, but it's also kind of hemmed in. It's in a very narrow, a very limited space, and all of the stuff that sits inside the orbit, including the eyeball, the muscles that move the eyes, the nerves that supply the muscles that move the eyes, the blood vessels, the fat, the other tissue that protects or shields the eye from injury, all of that stuff has to fit into a narrow, bony space. So there's not a lot of room for anything to get bigger. And when those muscles from the thyroid disease, the eye muscles, get bigger, that tends to limit the movement of the eye within its shell, within its bony socket. And so sometimes that means that your eye doesn't move well left, right, or up or down, and so you may get double vision because one eye moves okay and the other eye doesn't move as well. So the two eyes point in different directions. That causes double vision. So sometimes thyroid disease can give double vision. In its earlier stages, it generally tends to cause a little bit of forward protrusion of the eye out of the socket because the material inside that bony socket becomes very is limited, and it becomes swollen, and the swollen or thickened muscles push things out. So the eyeball actually gets pushed out of the socket and causes a condition that we call exophthalmos. Exophthalmos means a protruding or eyeball that's pushed slightly out of the socket. Now, the first thing that happens when you see that is that the lids, the eyelids, tend not to close quite as well because your eye is pushing a little bit forward. The eyelids are designed to close over your eye when the eyeball is in its normal position. And so if it's pushed slightly forward, the eyelids perhaps don't work quite as well. And if the eyelids don't work as well, that means the blinking reflex isn't working as well. And if blinking isn't working well and the eyelids aren't covering the eye well, the surface of the eye dries out. Now, dry eyes, as you've heard, if you've listened to this program in the past, dry eyes can cause a lot of different types of trouble in the eyes, ranging from mild irritation or scratchy feeling to tearing, blurring, burning of the eyes, other types of problems, and even in severe cases can lead to severe permanent damage and scarring of the eyes and an effect on the vision. So severe dry eye can occur if the eye is pushed way out of the socket, and so the eyelids don't close at all. This can cause very serious problems as well. But in the early stages, when people first start to get manifestations of thyroid condition in the eyes, they just tend to get a little dryness of the eyes. And so we may look at them and say, oh, your eyes are a little dry, and not think too much about the thyroid condition until the eyes become a little bit more prominent. And people come in and say, you know, my eyes look more bug-eyed or more prominent than they used to. You know, what's going on? And we do some measurements and we say, oh, yes, your eyes are a little bit more prominent. They are pushing out of the sockets a little bit. Let's go and see if this might be due to thyroid disease or something else. Other things can cause that too. But thyroid is the most common thing. So thyroid disease can cause dryness of the eyes, ranging from mild to very severe and causing permanent damage to the vision in the most advanced cases. It can lead to loss or poor movement of the eyes, which can cause double vision and headaches and problems focusing because the two eyes aren't aligned together properly. And it can be treated, usually the treatment is designed to improve the symptoms, and then the underlying thyroid condition needs to be treated to help control that and hopefully reduce the progression of the eye condition in the eye. So if you have a thyroid condition, you may want to be getting your eyes checked on a regular basis, make sure that there's no evidence that it's starting to cause any effect on your eyes. If you particularly notice symptoms of irritation of the eyes or double vision or anything like that, and you have a thyroid condition, then that should definitely be evaluated. Anytime you get new onset of double vision, what we call diplopia, that needs to be checked out because that's unusual and abnormal, and that can be a sign of not only thyroid condition, but other serious things affecting the brain as well as the eyes themselves and the nervous system. So definitely be aware of thyroid condition and its potential effect on the eyes. Many people have high or low thyroid functions and don't have any problems at all with the eyes, and that's fine. But for the people who do have eye problems, there are treatments available. Sometimes it even requires surgery to get the eye to sit further back inside the orbit, and that's in more extreme cases. The one thing about treating thyroid disease is that if we are going to do surgery or treat it surgically, we do want to wait until it's in a quiet phase. Usually thyroid flares up and quiets down, at least as it affects the eyes. And so you want to make sure it's in a quiet phase before you treat that with surgery, because you don't want it to be changing while you're operating or while the eye is healing. All right, well, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back, and we'll talk about some eye news.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Life has never looked better with Hawaiian Eye Center.
The Hawaiian Eye Show phone lines are now open. Give us a call at 521-8383 with your questions for the doctor. If you're calling from the neighbor islands, call us toll-free at 888-565-8383. Now, back to your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. And here we are in the second segment of the Hawaiian Eye Show. And if we are going to talk about some eye news, some of the questions that come up during the week, some of the things, studies and things that come up during the week that we find that we want to bring to you and see if you might be interested. And, you know, there's this whole new technological age out there where people have access to all kinds of information. And we try to put a lot of information out there in a lot of different ways. You know, we have this radio program that comes to you on Saturday mornings and rebroadcast Sunday evenings. Saturday morning, you have a chance to call in if you have a question, so keep that in mind. We also have a significant presence online. We have a Facebook page in which we list links to some of the articles and interesting things that are happening in the world of eyes. And, so you can become a fan of our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/Hawaiian Eye Center and then look for the button, the little button there that says like, and if you click like, then you'll get some of the updates as we post them. We won't keep your wall too busy there, but we'll once in a while post one of these interesting stories that comes up from time to time. And we also have our Twitter page, and we have some information related to some of the links and so forth on Twitter as well. So go to twitter.com and look for Dr. Tortora, and you can get access to all kinds of information through our website, hawaiianeye.com, and there are also hundreds of other websites out there that provide a lot of information. What is sometimes an issue, though, is how do you know how reliable that information that you're getting actually is? And so it turns out that sometimes the information is reliable and sometimes it's not. And so how do you judge? How do you determine the difference? How, if you're going out there to try to find information about medical stuff, how do you figure out what's accurate, what's appropriate, and what's not? You know, I have patients come to me all the time who say, gee, I saw this article about what was the most recent one I saw? Indium, I think. Indium is some kind of a heavy metal. It's an element, and it's a rare element. And apparently people have now been taking indium supplements because it's supposed to help to reduce your aging, because indium is not found in our bodies after age 35, I think, is what I saw when I looked it up on the web. And if you don't have And so if you don't have indium, obviously, after 35, obviously it's tied to aging. And so if you take more of it, obviously that's going to help you age less. I mean, that's all kind of conjecture, I think. This hasn't been proven, but how do you know? You know, when you look it up. My patient was coming to me and asking me about this indium and whether he should be taking this because it's supposed to be helpful for glaucoma. And so, you know, and the answer is probably not, probably doesn't do much. But we don't know. Hasn't been studied. Hasn't been looked at in a way that we can really make a definite conclusion. So the article that I have here that prompted this whole discussion about what's online is an article about medical misinformation. And I have an article here that says, Mark Twain wrote, "Be careful about reading health books. You may die of a misprint." I'd like to have this quotation blown up and framed in my office exam room, according to this author. It's not books that I'm worried about, though. It's the internet. Never before has there been such a bounty of easily accessible information available to the public and the medical field. Gone are the days of trekking to the library to do research. Most people are seeking news or knowledge just on the home computer. Google it has become a common catchphrase among the young and old. The internet puts a world at our fingertips, but is too much information a dangerous thing? So this particular author, who is not a physician, says, I'm not saying the internet is the root of all evil. There are many factual, informative, and helpful websites for people looking for more information on a specific symptom or disease. There are online support services for those dealing with specific diseases or syndromes. Medical journals and textbooks are published online, making it easy for clinicians to stay up to date on the latest research. These are just a few of the positive applications of the web. However, there also seems to be a website supporting every bizarre theory or endorsing a wonder treatment for whatever ails you. Many websites are not fact-checked. These days, if you have an opinion, it's easy to present it as a fact online. This doctor who's, this is a doctor, who wrote the article here. It says, I have patients calling me in the middle of the night to ask me if they might have some unusual disease they read about online. Nervous, expectant moms are asking about rare complications of pregnancy or delivery. Most often, patients are not only diagnosing themselves from what they read online, but they're also eager to say how they should treat their self-diagnosed ailment, all before there's been any medical contact with the patient. So it's worth cautioning patients with the same warning that you might give a child. It says not everything on the internet is true. So there is a study here that basically looked at some information of about how people get information online. It says a survey was done. It says the internet puts solid health information on a patient's fingertips, but two new studies reveal that too many of those fingertips stray into questionable territory. In a survey from Wolders Kluwer Health, 78% of physicians said the lack of time is one of the most common challenges for patient-physician communication. The next biggest problem, cited by 53% of the physicians, is misinformed patients. So there was a phone survey done in August, included more than 300 physicians in the U.S., roughly split between primary physicians and specialists. And the survey sheds more light on the increasingly larger role, for good and ill, that the internet plays in healthcare. The Pew Research Center reports that 78% of adults use the internet, and of these, 83% look up health information online. However, the value of that information is debatable. While just over half, 53% of physicians in the Wolders Kluwer Health Survey said that easier access by patients to medical knowledge has improved the exam room experience, 1 in 5 said that this easier access has been detrimental, leading to misinformation and incorrect self-diagnosis. Similar misgivings emerged in a study presented by the Cleveland Clinic Foundation. Researchers at the annual scientific meeting of the American College of Gastroenterology, which ended this past week, the researchers analyzed 100 most viewed YouTube videos on inflammatory bowel disease and rated their overall educational quality as poor. Clinicians and their patients need to be aware of misleading information posted by patients or particularly by pharmaceutical companies who often post videos to make it seem like they are coming from a patient when in actuality it's a company advertisement, said researcher Saburam Mukhawar in a press release. These sources are not transparent. The internet and social media are not going away. YouTube is a powerful platform to deliver and receive healthcare information. So healthcare providers need to provide information that is appropriate for their patients so that their patients can tell what information they're looking for online is accurate and what isn't. So how do you know if the information you're looking for online is accurate? Well, first of all, you want to look at the source and you want to consider the source. And you sometimes have to look a little bit farther into it than just, you know, the heading on the web page to figure out who this comes from or what the source is. It could be a blog, and if the person who's blogging is knowledgeable, that is that's a good thing. It could come from a reputable institution, Cleveland Clinic, the Mayo Clinic, various other major health organizations have websites and blogs and other information out there which talks about different types of medical conditions and how they're treated and some of the most recent innovations that affect these types of conditions. Smaller websites of smaller companies like our own website, HawaiianEye.com, provide information. And if it's coming from a reputable medical practice, the information is generally reliable. But if it's coming from a patient or from a drug company or from someone who has an opinion, or if it sounds like when you're reading it that someone has an axe to grind, in other words, that they're trying to make a point or trying to put down someone or something in the field. For example, let's say someone had a bad experience with a medication and they write, they post information online about how this medication is dangerous and it may cause serious problems and this and that. If you see a lot of negative information or a lot of very positive information, this is usually a sign that the person or the group that's posting the information has some kind of an agenda. So you want to see a balanced approach. If you see someone who's raving about some, if you see information raving about some treatment or some medicine or some procedure or the effectiveness of something, then that's probably not as reliable. If you see something that's very negative on something, then that may not be as reliable. And plus, you want to look at multiple sources. You want to make sure you're not looking only at a group that has formed itself because these are people who have all had an adverse effect to a medication. The medications certainly do have adverse effects, and sometimes the medications perhaps should not be on the market, but many times the adverse effects are far outweighed by the benefits that those medications provide in the people who use them or take them. And so that is certainly something to bear in mind as well. So take everything that you see online with a little bit of a grain of salt. Consider the source. Look at it, and if something seems too good to be true or even too bad to be true, then it may not be true, may very well not be true. So when I see these claims for the different types of supplements that claim to make you younger, to give you more energy, to do this, to do that, and generally seem to cure every disease and every ailment that you might have, then I say, yeah, right. I don't think that's so accurate. And then I try to look for other supporting or not supporting information by going further down the list in Google. Also, a lot of these marketing companies have the whole search engine thing down, and they can figure out how to get their sites high up in the search engine. So if you search for something in particular, the high up sites that you get, you're likely to end up with information about someone who's really worked hard to get their information up there. Now, Google is working hard to try to make their searches relevant and make sure that the search gives you information that you're actually looking for. But a lot of times companies will sort of play that game and get their agenda high up on the search engines or run search engine ads so that you see their information prominently displayed when you type in a certain search. So you may want to try searching things in different ways using different keywords and so forth as well. We're going to take a short break for the news. When we get back, it'll be time to take your calls, and of course we'll do some more iNews.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Their experienced surgeons have extensive cataract and general eye care experience. And they proudly welcome their newest eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen Ree. Dr. Ree brings a wealth of experience to the Hawaiian Eye Center team. To schedule an appointment with a member of the eye care team, call Hawaiian Eye Center today at 733-2020 or visit the website at hawaiianeye.com.
The news authority in Honolulu is News Radio, 830 KHVH.
It's 77 degrees, mostly cloudy in Honolulu. I'm Julia Norton Dennis. Here's what's happening. The Greek prime minister is considering his options as he struggles to put together a temporary coalition government. He says it's a necessary step to if Greece is to secure billions of dollars in international rescue funds. But a conservative opposition leader is refusing to join the coalition and is calling instead for new elections. Tens of thousands of opposition activists have turned out in central Rome to call for the ouster of Premier Silvio Berlusconi. The protesters from throughout Italy were joined by center-left politicians from France and Germany. Berlusconi's grip on power has been weakened by the debt crisis and infighting in his coalition. Honolulu police are investigating a fatal shooting at a McDonald's in Waikiki early this morning. They say a man was shot and killed at about 3 a.m. at the restaurant on Kohio Avenue between Seaside and Royal Hawaiian Avenues. A suspect is in custody. No other details are available at this time. Toxicology results showed 18-year-old Taylor Nanea Pangan Fergestrom, who died when the SUV she was driving crashed last week, did not have either alcohol or drugs in her system. The Honolulu Medical Examiner says Pangan Fergestrom died as a result of injuries received in the crash on Kilauea Avenue October 27th. Three others in the vehicle were injured, two of them critically. Queen Emma Land Company, which owns the international marketplace in Waikiki, has planned a $250 to $300 million renovation of the open-air retail center. It'll put 355,000 square feet bazaar on three levels. The famous banyan tree in the center of the market, as well as other large canopy trees, will be preserved. Construction could begin as early as 2013 and will temporarily displace about 150 merchants. Island weather flash flood watch for Oahu through tomorrow. Today, partly sunny, scattered showers, a high in the mid-80s. Tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered showers, a low near 73, and tomorrow, partly sunny. Currently in Honolulu, 77.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers you complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Advanced technology lenses are designed to provide good vision for distance, near and in between, with less dependence on eyeglasses. When cataracts blur vision, a short, painless procedure helps. If you have a cataract and want back youthful vision, call Hawaiian Eye Center at 733-2020 or visit hawaiianeye.com.
The phone lines are now open at 521-8383. On the Neighbor Islands, it's a free call, 1-888-565-8383. And now, here's Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Can you see me now? Hawaiian eyes, can you see me lost?
All right, welcome back, everyone. And here we are on the second half of the Hawaiian Eye Show. And if you do have a question, this is a perfect time to call, because the second half of the program is when we typically take your calls. 521-8383 is the number to call if you want to reach me here live on a Saturday morning. And if you're calling from the Neighbor Islands, there is a toll-free number as well. You can dial 888-565-8383. They have a neat little app also that you can find on your iPhone or your iPod or your iPad, which is iHeartRadio. The iHeartRadio app also allows you to listen live to KHVH Radio here in Honolulu. And if you are traveling outside the state or outside the country and you still want to keep in touch with some of your local Clear Channel stations, you do have the opportunity to do that on the iHeartRadio app. And so you could actually be listening to me right now from somewhere around the country or around the world. Who knows? All right. So we've been talking about some different news stories, some stories about some of the things that have been going on in the field of eye care and healthcare in general. We did talk a little bit about the internet and the fact that you could get misinformation if you don't if you're not careful and you don't know exactly where the source is coming from of the information that you're looking for. So we'll try to provide good information here on the program. And we do have a caller standing by. We're going to go to Lynn, who's standing by on Manoa. Hi, Lynn. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. I, for the last couple of months, have had little flashes at this outer perimeter of my eye, and I wonder what could be causing that. It's sort of if I move my head suddenly, and I actually mostly see them at night once it gets dark.
All right. Well, flashes are a problem that is fairly common. They sometimes are associated with floating spots in your vision. Do you see any floaters or any floating spots?
No.
Okay. What a flash in your eye usually means is that there's some kind of pressure or tension or tugging or pulling on the retina. The retina is a seeing tissue. It coats the back of the eye, and that's how we see. Light hits the retina. These little light impulse sends a signal down the optic nerve to the brain, and that... And that retina is basically designed to see light, and that's all it does. So any impulse or pressure on the retina or pulling on the retina causes a sensation of a little flash of light. There's a gel that fills the inside of our eye. It's called the vitreous gel, and as that gel becomes older, it becomes more liquid, it becomes softer, it collapses a little bit, and it pulls away from the back of the eye. And as it pulls away, it can tug a little bit on the retina. Each of those little pulls or tugs can look like a flash. Sometimes people see it when they turn their head because that gel is shifting inside the eye and pulling a little bit, or sometimes they see it when they turn their eyes, not their whole head. And it's more visible at night because of the flash. So generally, this is a normal change in the eye, but once in a while, it can cause trouble because that gel pulling away from the retina can actually create a tear or a hole in the retina, and that can lead to other problems, like serious problems like retinal detachment. So whenever people notice flashes or floating spots in the vision, or both, because they're often connected, then we do recommend that you have an eye examination to make sure that everything's okay. Now, you've had these symptoms for a couple of months, you said, so it's probably not urgent, but I would try as soon as practical to get your eyes checked to make sure that everything is okay.
All right. Well, great. Thank you so much.
All right. Aloha. So flashes and floaters are a common problem. This is something that occurs in many people as they get into their 50s and older, as this gel inside the eye called the vitreous gel separates from the back of the eye. As it separates, it pulls a little bit, and it creates a little tugging or pulling on the retina. You just want to make sure that doesn't create a hole or a tear in the retina or some kind of other damage to the retina over time, because that could, of course, lead to more serious problems down the road. All right, we have an article here about cataracts and cataract surgery. It says here, cataract surgery helps patients with Alzheimer's disease. And this is, we just had the annual meeting of the American Academy of Ophthalmology, which is one of the largest meetings of eye specialists in the world. It may be the largest one in the world. And this particular meeting is often a forum to share information that's new, that's been explored and researched recently, people have done studies about. And so this particular article was presented from the Academy of Ophthalmology meeting. It says here, elderly patients with Alzheimer's disease who have cataracts may benefit from surgery in terms of improved sight, as well as improved interaction with others and lessened depression. These improvements can also ease the burden on caregivers. But for some, increased post-surgical agitation may also occur. The results of a four-month Life from Vision in Alzheimer's Disease Interventional Perspective Study were presented at the Academy of Ophthalmology meeting by Brigitte Girard, MD, from Tignon Hospital in Paris, France, at the Academy of Ophthalmology meeting. The aim of our study was to assess the neuropsychological benefits of cataract surgery among sight-impaired Alzheimer's patients with debilitating cataract. Hypothesis was that a debilitating cataract in Alzheimer's patients may increase cognitive disorders or prevent communication, according to Dr. Girard. Results were assessed at 1 and 3 months after surgery. The main criteria were patient behavior score and burden on the caregiver. Secondary criteria were cognitive scores, so they assessed their mental status, autonomy scores, so how much they could do on their own, and depression scores. Results that remained stable or improved were considered to be positive outcomes. So if they stay the same or got a little bit better, that was a positive outcome. It said 46 patients with Alzheimer's disease from geriatric centers around Paris were enrolled. All surgeries were performed at the same hospital. In all, 42 cataract surgeries with lens implantations were done. Agitation at the time of surgery was not an issue. 37 patients required only local anesthesia or regional anesthesia, meaning either eye drops or an injection. Patients were very old. The average age was about 86 years old. 23 of them were 85 or older. 9 were age 90 or older. And the majority were women, 82% of them, because women tend to live longer. The results showed that cataract surgery significantly improved visual acuity, improved behavior, especially sleep patterns, and lessened depression, especially in patients with mild dementia. 6 of 7 patients improved in these measures. However, agitation and motor behavior increased in some patients. The postoperative burden on the caregiver improved in 25% but worsened in 25%, principally because of increased patient agitation. The first worldwide study about the benefits of cataract surgery in Alzheimer's patients has shown a dramatic improvement in visual acuity. Surgery does not affect a person's general condition or dementia, according to Dr. Girard. So interesting thing it says, so one of the conclusions says, this is a fascinating study. I would suspect that the patient outcome would vary with a patient doing better one day and not so well another day, but this study is a great step in the right direction to prove that we can improve a patient's quality of life even when they have dementia and a caregiver's ease of care might be improved. It's nice to know that these can occur at least some of the time. Study suggests that improving the vision by removing a cataract in someone who has dementia, in this case Alzheimer's disease, seems to improve their overall function and their ability to do well. So it says this was not a controlled study where there was a group of people who didn't get surgery and a group of people who did get surgery, but they did conclude that there was some benefit to having the cataract removed in patients with Alzheimer's disease because they seemed to improve their overall function once they had that done. So I have the next step is we want to have Dr. Ree from the Hawaiian Eye Center give his report. Dr. Ree is one of our eye surgeons, and he is a specialist in cornea and anterior segment as well as being a comprehensive ophthalmologist taking care of a wide range of medical problems. Good morning, Dr. Ree. How are you today?
Oh, hey. Good morning, Dr. Tatar. I'm doing great.
Good. Well, thanks for checking in this morning. Look forward to hearing what's new at your end of the world.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had an interesting case recently. A lady had come in with essentially a corneal perforation or a hole on her cornea. And I think what may have happened was she probably had an infection and that kind of lingered, got worse over time. It slowly weakened the cornea and eventually poked a hole right through it. So that's not good. What can happen is all the fluid just comes out of the eye, and in her case, her iris, or the colored part of the eye that forms the pupil, kind of pooched out a little bit and, in fact, just plugged the hole. So when she had come in, there wasn't any fluid coming out, but she had her iris kind of like plugging it, kind of like a stopper in the bathtub. Which kind of stabilized things, but of course we can't just leave her like that. So I decided to do a corneal transplant where I replaced the central part of her cornea with a donor cornea. So that'll kind of settle. That's my son. Fix the situation so that no more fluid comes out of the eye and stabilizes the structure of the eye. So she's doing pretty well right now. Of course, right after the transplant, the recovery time is pretty long, but she no longer has a hole and her eye is stable. And fortunately, we can get her vision back to what it was before. So it's a really interesting case. Fortunately, we don't see that too often, but when it does happen, we can do something about it surgically.
That sounds like a great success story there. So we're glad that you're able to make that work. It sounds like your son wants to say something on the radio, too. Does he want to share some of his experiences with this?
He's clamoring for some fruit. I think I should go feed him.
All right. Well, thanks for your call today.
Okay.
All right. Well, that was Dr. Stephen Ree of the Hawaiian Eye Center. Dr. Ree is our newest surgeon and physician. He's been with us for almost 2 years now at the Hawaiian Eye Center, and he is a comprehensive ophthalmologist with a specialty in cornea and anterior disease. And the cornea specialty comes in handy on patients like the one that he just described, who had a severe damage to the cornea, and he was able to treat the patient and get some eventually do a transplant of the cornea in order to help try to restore vision. So that's a nice story, and hopefully the patient ends up continuing to improve. We're going to take a short break. When we get back, we'll do some more eye news, and of course, we'll take your calls.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
With the latest technology, cataract care is often a fast, painless procedure with a rapid return to normal vision and normal activities.
It doesn't hurt. It just takes, 15, 20 minutes the most, and you're out. That's it.
We strive to make your procedure safe and painless. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
The phone lines are open at 521-8383. And from the neighbor islands, 1-888-565-8383. Now, back to Dr. Christopher Tortora, our host of the Hawaiian Eye Show.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the year and the slow
parade. Ah, yes, Doctor, my eyes. And that's what we're talking about today is eyes. And if you want to talk about eyes, give us a call. Our phone number here, 521-8383 here on Oahu. And we're here live Saturday morning talking about a variety of issues related to the eyes and to eye care. And if you want to get a little executive summary of some of the things that we're talking about, check us out on Twitter, twitter.com/Dr. Tortora. That's D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A. And if you want to reach us here in the next few minutes, you can give us a call, 521-8383, or send us a question on Twitter. And we'll be happy to try to answer your question in the next 8 or 9 minutes that we have left of the program here this morning. We've been talking about some different issues related to the eyes. And one of the questions that comes up in medicine in general on a regular basis is related to new medications. New medications are often thought of as better than existing medications, although they're not always. But oftentimes, in order to actually be approved as a new medication, a medication has to show that it has some clinical superiority to a medication that already is in existence. And that whole process of approval of medication is done by the Food and Drug Administration in this country. And a lot of times, the Food and Drug Administration comes under criticism because it takes it a while to approve new medications, new drugs. And this is a two-edged sword. You know, it takes a while because they're studying it very carefully because they don't want bad things to happen, like a drug to be approved that turns out to have a horrible side effect. This is what happened in the 1950s and 60s with a drug called thalidomide, where pregnant mothers took this drug to relieve nausea in early pregnancy and morning sickness, and it turned out to cause terrible deformities of the babies. And so the FDA always points to situations like that where it was able to prevent these types of things because that medication was never approved in the U.S. It was approved elsewhere in the world, And so there are a lot of, there are very few thalidomide babies floating around in the U.S., but there are quite a few in other parts of the world. And so the FDA claims these types of victories as protecting the public, which is excellent, which is good that they do that. On the other hand, sometimes people say the FDA takes too much time to approve a medication because it is spending so much time studying it that it takes forever for the medication to come out, and people who could have benefited from it are dying or becoming seriously more ill because they haven't had access to the medication that could have approved sooner. So there is an article here that I came across that says the FDA says it's no slowpoke in approving new drugs. Criticized by manufacturers and congressional Republicans for regulatory slowness, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration announced yesterday, this was announced a couple of days ago, that it has been pretty quick lately in approving new drugs, 35 in the fiscal year ending September 31st, to be exact. For 24 of these 35 drugs, the U.S. beat all other countries to the punch in giving them market clearance, the agency said. The number of new drug approvals in fiscal 2011 was the second highest in the past decade. The top year was 2009, when 37 drugs received market clearance. The FDA credits its speedy performance to expedited approval processes, flexibility in clinical trial requirements, and money collected from manufacturers through the 19-year-old Prescription Drug User Fee Act, which helps to fund the drug vetting process. Before the funding program, American patients waited for new drugs long after they were available elsewhere, according to Janet Woodcock, MD, director of the FDA's Center for Drug Evaluation and Research. As a result of the user fee program, new drugs are rapidly available to patients in the U.S. while maintaining our high standards for safety and effectiveness. The agency touts many of the drugs in the class of 2011 as important advances in patient care. Standouts include medication for Hodgkin's disease, which is the first since 1977, a new drug for lupus, the first one in 50 years, treatments for hepatitis C infection, a medication for late-stage lung cancer, and late-stage melanoma. And so these are some among the drugs that they feel are going to provide great advantages to people. The FDA has been under fire in recent months from congressional Republicans who say that the agency exemplifies how government regulation strangles innovation and impedes economic growth. With the support of industry, the GOP has proposed a number of measures to streamline and speed up the approval process for drugs and medical devices, such as easing conflict of interest rules that are said to discourage experts from serving on FDA advisory panels. The reform has attracted bipartisan backing. Last month, Senator Amy Keogh-Buchar, a Democrat, and Senator Michael Bennett, a Democrat, joined Senator Richard Burr, a Republican, in introducing a bill that would make FDA conflict of interest rules similar in strictness to those in the rest of the federal government. Okay, so that's the other issue is funding. Of course, as with everything in the government today, trying to see whether the government is going to give the FDA more money to do what it does and what kind of a priority they'll give to that. So interesting idea, interesting article. Food and Drug Administration, I think, you know, does do some things well, but is somewhat frustrating to deal with, particularly for manufacturers who feel that they have a very good drug and they want to get that drug out and to the market as quickly as they can. On the other hand, the federal government is charged with protecting the population, and so the Food and Drug Administration takes its role seriously of making sure that these drugs have been vetted, they have been checked out, and studies are done appropriately. There are no shortcuts and cheating and other things when they do the studies. And, you know, as a result, I think, of the FDA process, the approval process and so forth, I think in many cases it does help to make the drug companies think twice about how they're going to run their studies and how they're going to make sure that they follow all the right rules, cross all the T's, dot all the I's, so that they know that they're more likely to get the approval of the FDA in a shorter period of time. On the other hand, sometimes it seems like the things that they're asking for are relatively minor, and so that is the question that always comes up with bureaucracy is how much of the bureaucracy is really necessary and how much is just spinning your wheels. All right. Well, we've been talking about some regulatory things, some government things. If we've been talking about eyes a little bit, about eye problems. If you have a question about eyes, you have just a couple minutes now to call. 521-8383 is the number to reach us at here at the radio show. I want to spend just a couple of minutes talking about a very common eye problem, which we're learning more and more about in coming weeks. As a matter of fact, I'm giving a lecture to some doctors this week, or this next coming week, about this condition, and that is known as ocular surface disease, also used to be known as dry eye syndrome. The dry eye syndrome is kind of a misleading term because it suggests that the eyes are actually dry, which is not always the case in this ocular surface disease. Sometimes the tear film, which is the moisture layer on the surface of the eye, is just not composed of the proper elements, or that the elements that compose it are not healthy. And so it turns out that sometimes the glands that produce oil and tears and other things are just not working as well as they should. And as a result, they are not actually able to coat the surface of the eye terribly well. We do have a caller. And, whoops, I think I cut you off. I'm sorry if I cut you off. Unfortunately, I don't think we really have time for more than an extremely brief question because we're actually running down to the end of the thing. So let's see. We still have Charlie here. Hi, well, okay. So, okay, I guess I lost you. I'm sorry, Charlie, but I'm going to have to, you're going to have to put off your question until next week, I think, because we've been here for an hour already talking about eyes and eye care, and I've had a lot of fun, and I hope you have too. Thanks to Andrea for helping out here in the studio, and thanks to all your listeners for making this show work through your calls and through your email. If you enjoyed our program today, be sure to tell your friends about us so they can listen also. If you learned something new, listen again next week. And if you have a question, you can always email it to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air. Other ways to reach us other than email include Twitter. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/HawaiianEyeCenter. Don't forget to check out our website, www.hawaiianeye.com. It's sure been a pleasure talking with you. I'll keep my eyes peeled for you, and I hope you'll keep an eye out for us. The Hawaiian Eye Center does sponsor this program as a public service. The Hawaiian Eye Center is located here on Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island, and we hope you'll come visit. Thanks for listening, and aloha.
You've been listening to The Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with Harvard-trained eye surgeon Dr. Christopher Totora. If you have an eye problem, want to get a second opinion, or aren't seeing as well as you used to, make an appointment with Dr. Totora or one of the doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center in Central Oahu or Hilo by calling C-2020. That's 733-2020. Until next week, here's looking at you.
Life has never looked better with Hawaiian Eye Center.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
I'll be politically incorrect because the political system is no longer correct.
Weekday afternoons at 4.
Sucks to be you. You're going to have to listen to me speak.
KHVH Honolulu. And iHeart.